Activated virus defense system. Prepare to download.
Initiated startup sequence. Welcome.
Hello and welcome to the podcast for the 22nd Annual FIRST Conference in Miami, Florida, June 13th through 18th, 2010. This series of interviews highlights some of the key speakers and presenters at this year's event. For more information, please visit the conference site at conference.first.org. We now join our interview in progress.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
This is Martin McKay, and I'm here today with Ian Amit, who gave a talk today at the FIRST conference, Cybercrime/War, Drawing the Hidden Links. How are you doing today, Ian?
Pretty good, Martin. Everything's pretty fine. It was a fun talk, and thanks for having me on.
Well, now, one of the big points of your talk was drawing the lines between cybercrime, which is what most of us deal with on a daily basis, and cyber warfare. And you're saying that we're actually seeing the two kind of cross over.
Definitely. Most of the talk basically laid out the similarities and differences between how cybercrime is being conducted on a daily basis, and showing showing the links between cybercrime and cyber warfare and how it's being used by states to carry out their dirty business, so to speak.
Well, one of the first slides you showed that really had some impact was you showed a picture of a bullet hole, and it was a close-up. So, and your point was is that we have, when we're looking at that particular attack, we really have no context until we can pull it out and have the bigger picture.
Definitely. And I'll be the first one to admit to that blame as well. Handling incidents in the past and seeing and still handling incidents is mostly about the immediate effect, the bullet hole, the attack, the attack vector. And what I'm trying to do now is kind of pull back a little bit and get the full context, see who's responsible, who's got the motive, who's paying for this. And we, as you saw in the presentation, we could find some pretty interesting insights on that.
Well, how do you go about getting that context when, in so many instances, we're just seeing the end results?
Yeah, pulling back means, again, looking for the motive, looking at the data itself, at the after effect, what was sought after as part of the attack. Part of the work has been focused on tracing back that information, kind of a lowjack for information, trying to see where it ends up. Is it being traded in the black market, just like credit cards and personal information? Is it being sold to other companies for corporate espionage? Or is it being transmitted and handled back to a state or a government for another reason?
Well, I mean, one of the other points you made in the presentation was about how the different government agencies are being involved and how they're being involved with people that wouldn't necessarily be thought of immediately as government agencies. Can you go into that a little bit?
Sure. A lot of governments are developing cyber capabilities. I hate to use the word cyber too much, but that's just what we have. And we see a lot of recruiting and a lot of training efforts in several governments all across the board. What we're also seeing is that a lot of that information and a lot of that training is derived from information that we already have on the cybercrime world. So what we were able to discern is that governments, when needed, when they actually need to perform some kind of action, they might actually use the criminal side to conduct it, either because they don't have enough expertise yet, or as an easy way to get to deny attribution and get plausible deniability.
Well, I don't think that seeing governments using criminals to commit acts that they don't necessarily want to be seen as something new. Should we be surprised that this is happening?
Not at all. As you noted, it's nothing new, but it still surprises me that we're getting surprised that this is happening on the online front, on the computer response front, because we have been seeing this as we both agreed to, that we saw this on the traditional warfare. So it's nothing new, but again, we're relearning the tactics and the strategies on the online front.
Well, another thing you mentioned is, I guess Russia has a group that they call the National Youth Association. And how is that related to cybercrime and cyber warfare?
It's less related to cybercrime. It's more of a cyber warfare thing. Those NASHI groups, as they're called in Russia, are basically political youth association. That are associated somehow with a political party, just like Boy Scouts or whatever it is. And the political parties are using those groups as a way to push communication, propaganda, as well as entice them to be active on the online front, hacktivism, and generating some kind of social media activity around a topic is usually guided by the political party behind the NASHI.
Now, you also mentioned that there's a not quite the exact same thing, but in Iran, there's a definite relationship between the hacking and community and the government there as well.
Definitely. That's one of the interesting kind of areas of the research that we did. We tracked down the group called the Iranian Cyber Army that was responsible for the Twitter attack back in the end of 2009. And we showed how it's connected and actually part of another group, a hacker group called ASEAN. It's a Shiite hacker group that has a lot of political vested interest as well as a track record of criminal conduct online.
You made a very valid point that attack on Twitter was done is as a method of controlling communication to the outside world. And why was it they were doing that at the time?
Well, if you look back at the timeline, you'll notice that during that time of the Twitter takedown, the DNS attack back in December 2009, the Iranians seized an oil well in Iraq. And that action has gone completely unnoticed in terms of public scrutiny in media because everyone was busy with the fact that Twitter's down. So it was a very nice effort in terms of the Iranians to coordinate those events so that their actions on the ground would go basically unnoticed.
So the Twitter fail whale was used to mask a physical attack in the real world.
Definitely, and it's not just a little something. It's Iranian troops crossing the border into Iraq and seizing an oil well. It's just nothing that doesn't show up every day or doesn't happen every day.
So you really are seeing that Howard Schmidt's quoted comment that there is no cyber war is sort of a misleading, because really what we're seeing is we're seeing it not necessarily used to kill people in hospitals or take down power centers, but we're seeing it as a component of regular warfare.
Definitely. I think, with all due respect to Howard, I think that his... he wasn't misquoted, but I think that quote was mostly political, kind of trying to calm down the whole media buzz around cyber war. Still, cyber war exists in some shape or form, and we have to acknowledge that in order to protect ourselves from it or acknowledge it to make sure that we're well prepared for whatever is going to come. It might not affect power plants right now, or stop the water supply. It could potentially later on, but again, my point is, it's usually going to be synchronized with a kinetic attack as part of a general warfare.
I think Jason Larson's giving an attack on the pesky infrastructure tomorrow, and he might put some make that not quite a true statement anymore. There may be more going on there than we know.
Again, hopefully not, but again, it's ask any critical infrastructure company and organization, they'll tell you that they're under constant probe, attack, espionage, whatever you want to call it, but you have to put the cards on the table and say, all right, we have to protect ourselves, we have to acknowledge that we're being scanned, probed, whatever it is, and be prepared.
I think what your talk is pretty much telling us is we have to acknowledge that there is a government entity there in all across the world, that we have to acknowledge that they are being involved in cyber attacks, as much as we both hate using the word cyber. How do we have to change what we're doing to acknowledge the fact that these are coming from, in some cases, state-sponsored agencies?
I think that and that was kind of the conclusion from my talk in terms of my personal view. We have to take a lot of what we learned from dealing with cybercrime and start to adapt it for the state versus state, for the political agenda, and see how we can create policies and create communications and agreements between countries to strengthen that front. If it's not there, it's going to be as easy to conduct cyber warfare as it has been easy so far to run cyber crime, basically, you know, unscrutinized. As long as you're crossing a border, a physical geographical border, which on the internet doesn't really matter, you can pretty much mask your attack and avoid a lot of law enforcement scrutiny.
But we have so much problems with dealing with cyber crime right now. How are we going to advance that to dealing with cyber warfare?
Yeah, I don't want to be the the bad oracle that says we're all, you know, it's going to take years to fix stuff. What I think is that we need to step up and start again. First step is realizing, is admitting that there is a problem. I don't think we're there yet. Once we do realize there's a problem and define it and say, all right, we're going to put resources, political, policy-wise, technical, into solving that problem, that's when we can line up both the law enforcement, cyber crime stuff, as well as the political agenda that relates to cyber warfare. So we're not there yet. Hopefully it's not going to take years, but it's a big problem from my perspective, trying to be as objective as possible.
Well, I've been talking with Ian Amit, and thank you very much for your time today, Ian.
Thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun.
Welcome. You've been listening to the podcast for the 22nd Annual First Conference in Miami, Florida, June 13th through 18th, 2010. Please visit the conference site at conference.first.org. For more information about me, you can also visit www.mckeay.net. Thank you and have a good day. Initiating shutdown sequence.